You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, January 3rd, 2026 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill. Today, we will be reading from the following main articles from the Arvada Press. Arvada's 2025 Year in Review by Riley Dunn. Jeffco has closed 22 schools. Here's Where They Stand by Susie Glassman. Artists complete two mural installations in Arvada by Riley Dunn. Judge orders release on bond for detained Colorado immigrants' rights activist by Quentin Young. From the Canyon Courier, wild wind power outages wreak havoc in the foothills by Jane Reuter. New Year's Day Ice Fest Lake Plunge Called Off by Jane Reuter. Hank Alderfer's Celebration of Life set for January 3rd by Jane Reuter. Sheriff in Georgetown Reach Deal for Law Enforcement by Christopher Coberl. From the Jeffco Transcript, Senator Winter Determined at Fault for Fatal Crash by Isabel Guzman. From the Arvada Press, Arvada's 2025 Year in Review. Anniversaries galore, a city council election and community organizing mark busy year for Arvada by Riley Dunn. 2025 saw Arvada celebrate its history as the year marked a number of significant milestones for the community, namely a slew of notable anniversaries. Institutions such as the Arvada Harvest Festival and Greater Arvada Chamber of Commerce celebrated their centennials, while the Arvada Center marked 50 years of being the city's cultural cornerstone. Over at City Hall, changes were afoot as well, as longtime city employee Don Wick was named city manager. Arvada entered into a homeless intergovernmental agreement with Jefferson County for cold weather sheltering, and two new city council members were elected to four-year terms. It was often a busy year in the city. Traditions were honored and embraced, and the community came together not just to celebrate but also to do good, such as the multi-pronged approach to the No Neighbor Hungry campaign that sprang up to help folks impacted by the snap freeze in November. Now, let's look at 2025 in Arvada. Chamber Centennial. In January, the Greater Arvada Chamber of Commerce celebrated the first of many important anniversaries within the city this year, marking 100 years since the chamber was incorporated and rebranding to Greater Arvada to reflect the regional approach the organization now takes. The chamber hosted an Eras Tort-themed gala for the occasion, complete with historical displays tracing the organization's history from a loose collection of local business owners to an important resource supporting small businesses in the area. Some of the chamber's long-standing traditions are still practiced today. The annual Man and Woman of the Year awards have been doled out since 1955. The Chamber's annual golf tournament has been held since 1967, and local favorite Taste of Arvada has been going strong since 2004. Chamber CEO Welch said that although the Greater Arvada Chamber is one of the oldest such organizations in the state, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. Our tagline for our 100-year anniversary is, "We're just getting started," Welch said. "We've reflected a lot on the incredible history of our organization, representing a ton of leadership, resilience, advocacy over the many-year history. But we also recognize that we're in this pivotal moment where there's a lot of potential moving forward for our community and for our businesses. And we're just so excited to take on what we've learned and apply it to the next steps of our organization." Wick named city manager. After a long process that involved two rounds of finalists, former deputy city manager Don Wick was named Arvada's city manager in April, succeeding former city manager Lori Gillis, who took the mantle from Mark Devon after he retired. Wick had previously served as Arvada's chief of police and has worked for the city in some capacity since 1985. I am honored to have been selected by the City Council to serve as Arvada's next city manager, Wick said at the time. I want to leverage my career experiences to continue to serve the residents of our community and to build upon the work of my predecessors. We have opportunities and challenges ahead, Wick continued. I am fortunate to have a strong leadership team and city team members who care about the city and the community. At the time of Wick's appointment, fellow Deputy City Manager Linda Haley had been leading the city team on an interim basis. Arvada turns 50, Sneed retires. The Arvada Center, one of the main local arts and culture hubs in the Jefferson County, celebrated its 50th anniversary this year with a star-studded theater season that included Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap and Disney's Frozen. The organization also announced the impending departure of longtime CEO Philip Sneed, which will go into effect in the summer of 2026. Sneed has been involved in the Arvada Center since its early days, first as an actor and then as an administrator. Leading the Arvada Center has been the greatest achievement of my working life, Sneed said. I am honored to have been able to play a key role in the organization during times of both crisis and opportunity, and I am so proud that I can end my leadership career where I began my professional life in the arts almost 50 years ago. Community Table relocates. Over the summer, local food bank Community Table moved from its longtime digs outside of Old Town to a new, more spacious facility in the East Arvada that it now calls home. The move had been years in the works and came with a bit of shuffling for local nonprofits. As Community Table moved into its new digs, Ralston House moved into the food bank's old home on 57th Avenue. Community Table CEO Sandy Martin said at the time of the move in July that she was proud of the work the nonprofit had done with its new neighbors to forge community bonds. We just appreciate how supportive the community is and how everybody's kind of going with the flow and allowing us to, you know, get the kinks out of this and make this a really wonderful experience for them, Martin said. We just love the new building. Arvada High School celebrates 125th anniversary. Arvada High School celebrated its 125th anniversary in August with the reopening of the school's history museum and a celebration that invited alumni to return to the campus for a look back at the school's history. Also this year, Schoolhouse Kitchen and Librations celebrated its 10th anniversary in the building where Arvada High School was founded way back in 1896. 100th Arvada Harvest Festival returns to Old Town. One of the most anticipated anniversaries this year came in the form of the 100th Arvada Harvest Festival, which saw the festivities return to Old Town after a few years away. This year's festival saw renewed fervor amongst Arvadans, who came out in droves for the parade, live music, mayor's reception, anniversary photo, and other festivities. Harvest Festival co-chair Carl Campanella attended its first Harvest Festival in 1957 when he was 4 years old. At the 100th Fest, he remarked about the tradition's place in the Arvada community. It's a stable, strong, solid community, Campanella said. To have an event like this go for 100 years, that's a good indication of how strong the community is and how stable it is. City enters into homelessness agreement with Jeffco. After years of debate regarding how to handle the city's unhoused population, Arvada entered into an intergovernmental agreement with other Jefferson County cities and the county itself to work together on a joint approach to cold weather sheltering this year. The change came after a year in which Mission Arvada filled the gap, left by the unexpected closure of the severe weather shelter network. Mission Arvada's efforts were met with a mix of enthusiasm and criticism from stakeholders in the city, with Arvada's leadership opting not to use the nonprofit for sheltering under the IGA. Arvada will pay $432,000 annually as part of the agreement. Griffith Levison elected to City Council. In November, Arvada's City Council got a bit of a shakeup as longtime District 3 Representative John Marriott stepped off the dais after becoming term limited. His seat was filled by Rebecca Levison, who beat out challenger Aaron Scoff for the seat. Filling the at-large seat left by Brad Rupert, who did not seek re-election, was fellow newcomer, new council member Michael Griffith, who defeated Denise Vargas for the position. District 1 Representative Randy Moorman won a re-election campaign to stay on the dais for 4 more years. Local organizations team up to fill SNAP freeze void. When it was announced that SNAP benefits would freeze during the federal government shutdown in November, local Arvada groups, including the Arvada Resiliency Task Force, came together to create the No Neighbor Hungry campaign, which saw $22,000 raised for local organizations that serve folks dealing with food insecurity. This campaign shows what's possible when individuals and businesses step forward together, Welch said. Every contribution, large or small, helps ensure that our whole community thrives. When we care for our neighbors, we strengthen the fabric of Arvada and build a more resilient, connected, and compassionate city for everyone. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. The anniversary photo at the 100th anniversary Arvada Harvest Festival. Photo by Lillian Fouglet. And this is a picture of several people, probably a couple hundred people, standing in the street and on the sidewalk in front of a building that I can't read it, but it says 1916 something at the top. And it's a red brick building. You can see an old lamppost. Across from it is a more modern looking gray building with lots of windows. There's also a two green trees in the background. They're standing under traffic lights. And the day is a blue sky day. There's also some tents, like their booth set up for the celebration. Lots of people in bright colors. There's a tie-dye. There's a pink shirt, a multicolored short-sleeve shirt. There's a little girl in a pink dress. And I see another tie-dyed shirt and a blue, royal blue shirt. I see a light blue shirt. And people are smiling, looking pretty happy. Some people are kneeling. And it looks like a all-around good time. Jeffco has closed 22 schools. Here's where they stand. 8 have new owners or users. 14 are still on the books. By Susie Glassman. Allendale Elementary in Arvada has sat empty for 6 years, maintaining it costs the district about $150,000 a year, according to testimony at an Arvada City Council meeting. The district is currently managing 22 closed school properties, most closed since 2021, when enrollment declines accelerated. A few, including Allendale and Zurger, have been vacant even longer. Of those, 8 have found new owners or uses. 14 haven't sold. The district site process tracker, last updated in March 2025, shows a mix of sales, leases, and properties not yet on the market. The properties with new lives. The district has sold, leased, or repurposed 8 buildings. 2 never hit the open market. Campbell Elementary in Arvada became an early childhood education center in August 2023. Sheridan Green Elementary in Westminster reverted to the city when the school closed, triggered by a decades-old clause in the property deed. 4 have sold outright for a combined total of roughly $13 million. Emory Elementary in Lakewood sold to the city for $4 million in November of 2025. The 17-acre site will be split. The city plans to resell roughly 10 acres, including the school building, to the Action Center for $1 million. The city will keep the remaining 7 acres for open space and park use. The board approved 3 other sales as a package on November 14, 2024, for a combined total of nearly $9 million. They include Glennon Heights Elementary in Lakewood, sold to Jacob Academy, a daycare provider, for underappraised value, according to the Lakewood Informer. The sale closed February 14, 2025. Thompson Elementary in Arvada, sold to Evoke Behavioral Health, which serves children with autism and developmental disabilities. The sale closed March 4, 2025. Vivian Elementary in Lakewood, sold to developer Carlson Associates, which plans to build single-family homes. The City of Lakewood separately purchased roughly 2 acres of the site for $596,720 to preserve as parkland, and the developer agreed to dedicate another acre to expand the adjacent park. Two more are leased. Witt Elementary in Westminster, leased to the Austin Centers for Exceptional Students, ACES, a special education program since June 2024. Fitzmaurice Elementary in Arvada, leased to Apex Park and Recreation District for Camp Fitzmaurice, child watch and youth recreation programming through August of 2026. The district has already spent more than $45 million upgrading the schools that absorb students from closed campuses, including new classrooms and preschool additions. Moving through the pipeline, two sales have been approved but haven't closed. Allendale Elementary in Arvada closed in 2019. Zurger Elementary in Westminster closed in 2012, leased to charter schools until 2023, now vacant. Five properties now carry the surplus label, meaning the district can start looking for buyers, but none have deals in place. The board declared Parr Elementary in Arvada surplus in April 2024. Four more followed in March of 2025. Bergen Meadow Elementary in Evergreen, Cullero and Pfeiffer Elementaries in Littleton, and a vacant lot called Evergreen Meadows. These properties will move through community meetings and a proposal process before the district finalizes any sales. Not yet considered. The district hasn't yet considered seven properties for surplus designation, meaning it is still evaluating whether it might need them in the future in Arvada. Arvada K through 8, closed summer of 2024, and Peck Elementary, summer of 2023. In Lakewood, Green Mountain Elementary, summer of 2023, and Mulholm Elementary, summer of 2023. In Wheat Ridge, Color Strand Elementary, summer of 2023, and Wilmore Davis Elementary, summer of 2023. In Westminster, Moore Middle School closed summer of 2024. The district has pledged to maintain and secure all properties until it sells them. Community members can sign up for updates through the district's property disposition webpage. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. Top left to right, Pfeiffer Elementary, Bergen Meadow Elementary, bottom left to right, Cullero Elementary, vacant lot at Evergreen Meadows. So this is a photo. It's got four different photos merged together. And top left is kind of a faraway photo of a one-story building. It's brick, and you can see some windows. And there's grass for about half the photo. There are about three trees as well. It's a bright, sunny blue sky day. There's also another photo to the right, and it is a photo of part of a building, and it has some writing, although I can't read it, but it says Bergen Meadow Elementary, and you can see the parking lot. You can see part of the school. It looks like an overhang that kind of comes over the side of the building and kind of juts out across part of the building. And there are a couple of trees, and it's a blue sky day with a few puffy clouds. The bottom left photo is another photo of a building, and it's taken from the walkway that enters it. So you get kind of a perspective view of the school, and there's several trees, there's some green grass, and there's a flagpole without a flag. And the building itself just takes up a small portion of the photo. It's kind of dark, and it looks like there's a sign, like a white sign out front, but I can't tell. It doesn't look like it has any writing on it. It's like an empty sign. Then there's another one in the bottom right corner. which is a vacant lot, and it's just a green rolling grass with some rolling hills in the distance, and there's quite a few trees, and it's a bright high cloud day. Artists complete two mural installations in Arvada. Majestic View and Leyden Rock Underpass get fresh coat of paint. By Riley Dunn. Artists completed work on two murals in Arvada, one at the Majestic View Nature Center by David Schwartz, and another at the Leyden Rock Underpass along the Barbara Gulch Trail by Graham Carraway. Both murals were completed in November. The mural at Majestic View is located in the storage garage just east of the Nature Center and was started in fall after an artist selection process that took place in August. Stewart's mural wraps all around the garage and includes imagery highlighting wildlife native to Colorado, including bumblebees, prairie dogs, hummingbirds, mule deer, a western painted turtle, and native plants such as fireweed, penstemons, and arrowleaf balsam root. The mural is accented by flowing water motifs. The Leyden Rock Underpass mural is located east of Leyden Rock Drive and west 82nd Avenue along the trail. Carraway began the installation in September. The mural depicts local flora and fauna and began with a proposal from local community member Janet Tomaru Clemmy, who had the initial idea for the mural. Arvada's special events and public arts manager Adele Burton said the murals push Arvada closer to its goal of having public art accessible within a 10-minute walk of every resident. With the completion of these two murals, the Arvada Arts and Culture Commission continues bringing art into everyday spaces across Arvada, Burton said. These two murals help support the AACC's goal of having every resident within a 10-minute walk of a piece of public art. These installations not only brighten up our city, they celebrate our native landscape and build community pride, Burton continued. And this article is included by several photos. The first one is a Majestic View mural depicts local wildlife. And this is a picture of a turtle on a piece of wood with two birds flying around it. The turtle is green and he has some red actually on the kind of breast part of his underbelly. And his neck is out, and he's looking around at his surroundings. And the birds are, one is looking kind of toward him, and it's black with orange parts on its wings. And another one that looks similar to that is flying away. And the mural has some, looks like ocean kind of action water that's blue and green, and you can see a couple of drops. You can also see what looks to be like the sunrise or the sunset as well. The next image is with the caption, David Schwartz stands beside his mural at the Majestic View Nature Center. And this is a picture of a man standing in front of a mural, and the mural is a picture of a bee pollinating a flower. It's a close-up. The bee is quite large, and the flowers are pink, and they're quite large as well. And there's a kind of a lime green background for the rest of it, and the man who is standing in front of it has paint containers strapped to his body. He is also wearing a lime green shirt. It matches the exact color of the background of the mural. He looks to be like in his 20s or 30s. He's wearing a ball cap and he has glasses on. He's white and he's not quite smiling at the camera, but he has lots of paint on him and he looks like he's been busy. The next image with the caption, Graham Carraway completed a mural at Leyden Rock Underpass. So this is a picture of a mural with a man standing in front of it. He's smiling at the camera. He has around his neck, it looks like a oxygen mask of some sort and goggles, like a eye mask. He has on long sleeve blue jacket and gray pants, and he has paint on them. And he is standing in front of a mural, and he has a ball cap on, and he has glasses, and he's white, and I think I said he's smiling at the camera. His mural is a very large two flowers that are taken from the perspective of looking directly on top of them. And there's a hummingbird that looks like it's coming to get some nectar from the flowers. And he is standing right where the hummingbird comes into the flower. And it's kind of a perspective photo where you can see the rest of the painting, the mural, kind of going down the rest of the wall, but you can't quite tell what it is because there's a strong glare from the light at the other end of the, it looks like a tunnel or the overpass. Yes, the Leyden Rock Underpass is what this is. A judge ordered that federal officials must release Colorado immigrants' rights activist Jeanette Vizguerra on bond, according to her legal team. From an article titled, Judge Orders Release on Bond for Detained Colorado Immigrant Rights Activist. The order Sunday from immigration judge Bria Burgi came after a Friday bond hearing at the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center in Aurora, where ICE has detained Vizguerra for 9 months. Bond was set at $5,000. We are in the process of submitting the bond paperwork, but it can take 24 to 48 hours for that to be processed, her lawyer Laura Lichter said by text Sunday evening. The order explicitly declined to impose electronic monitoring, Lichter said. A citizen of Mexico, Vizguerra, 53, fled with her family to the United States in 1997 after criminal organizations persecuted her husband, as she has described in court documents. She rose to national attention as an immigrant rights activist during the first Trump administration when she took sanctuary in a Denver church to avoid deportation. She has four children, three of whom are U.S. citizens. She was arrested this year as the Trump administration undertook aggressive mass deportation efforts. The bond hearing arose as part of a habeas corpus petition in U.S. District Court of Colorado, where Vizguerra argues that the government targeted her for exercising protected First Amendment activities. The district court, which on Wednesday ordered that the bond hearing must occur, appeared to agree that the government retaliated against Vizguerra, who sometimes goes by Vizguerra Ramirez. Ms. Vizguerra Ramirez's substantial First Amendment allegations, taken to their logical conclusion, suggested that ICE did not act as an impartial decision maker in determining that she was subject to continued detention under statute and may have been motivated by a punitive purpose, Judge Nina Wang had written. Vizguerra is also in separate legal proceedings over the government's attempt to remove her from the country. Her family has confirmed that they intend to post the bond immediately with help from the Immigrant Freedom Fund so that she can be released as soon as processing allows, said a statement from Lichter. The story was shared under a republishing guidelines of Colorado Newsline at coloradonewsline.com. And this is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. A sign in support of Jeanette Vizguerra, a nationally known immigration rights activist who lives in Denver and has been in ICE custody since March 17th, sits on a table at the hands-off protest on April 5th. Photo by Lindsay Toomer, Colorado Newsline. And this is a photo of a sign on top of a table with some other documents. It looks like other maybe handouts, brochures. And this is a picture. The sign says Free Jeanette Vizguerra. And it's a picture of a woman. She is holding a microphone, talking into it. She has long, dark hair, and she's holding up something in her hand. I can't quite tell what it is. And she has on a red scarf and a white and red top. And it looks like she has a purse or something over her, around her neck. And at the bottom of the sign, it says Denver Aurora Community Action Committee. There's some other words, DACACA.NET. DACACA.NET is what it says. From the Canyon Courier, wild wind. Despite issues, firefighters say outages are vital to helping suppress fires where outages wreak havoc in the foothills. While extensive electricity outages created havoc for those living in the foothills, firefighters say they were grateful for them. Downed power lines and trees on power lines are typically a recipe for fire, but not when the lines are de-energized. If any of those downed power lines had become a fire, it had been awful, said Evergreen Fire Rescue spokesperson Stacy Martin. The weather conditions were Category 2 winds, and that's a hurricane. Nobody likes power outage before Christmas, but it sure helped in the big scheme of things. With a red flag fire danger warning for much of the Front Range expected to continue this weekend, Xcel Energy has started enacting planned power outages for many communities throughout the red flag warning area to prevent downed power lines from sparking new wildlands fires. The wind has already left one family homeless and triggered at least two wildfires in the conifer area. A fire at the Pleasant Park Road home that was without power was sparked by a malfunctioning generator, according to Elk Creek Fire spokesperson Bethany Urban. Then the wind blew the fire through the house, she said. The home was a total loss. The conditions led to three wildfires on December 19th. Firefighters and citizen volunteers descended on those breakouts, keeping them small and short. Timing for power restoration is uncertain. Many foothill homes and businesses lost power in the afternoon of December 17th and were without it for several days. The area is served by both Core Electric and Xcel. Core Electric and Xcel Energy continued restoring service to several hundred members still with power in the foothills December 22nd. Most were in Bergen Park, where lines were damaged by extreme winds. Other crews worked on single and smaller outages in Jefferson and Park counties. We anticipate we'll have all but a few members back on by 9 p.m. Monday, Corps spokesperson Amber King said. Estimated times of restoration are available again and updated for some locations. But the extent of damage to parts of the cooperative system makes it incredibly difficult to establish restoration timelines, she said. Those estimates still can't be made for some areas. CORE is using drones to visibly inspect areas hardest to access by foot. Staff engineers are helping the company's operations team identify and assess issues with lines, poles, and equipment in other affected areas. To report any further core service interruptions, visit its online outage center or call 833-267-3349. Xcel said it faced similar tough conditions in restoring power to the last of its customers impacted by the shutoff. Repairs include pole replacements and helicopter restorations, especially in areas in and around Evergreen, which was severely impacted by the wind event, a company press release said. Xcel also encouraged its customers to report any damage through its mobile at xcelenergy.com/out or by calling 1-800-895-1999. CORE does not do planned outages like Xcel, but has its lines set on alternate relay, extra sensitive settings designed specifically for extreme fire weather. A line is de-energized immediately when a fault, like a tree branch contacting the line, is detected. When we're on alternate relay settings, the entire circuit needs to be controlled in foot before we re-energize, she said. Xcel implemented public safety power shutoffs, or PSPS, which happens when it turns off power in certain areas to prevent wildfires during extreme or critical wild risk conditions. Fire agencies staffed high, working overtime, both Evergreen and Elk Creek fire agencies made plans for the windy weather, setting up command posts and recruiting volunteers who typically would not have been on call. We set up an incident command post in our training room and had a response plan, Urban said. We were running rigs all day yesterday. We covered a lot of downed power lines, downed trees, and the house fire. Evergreen firefighters have responded to over 188 calls during the several days' windy weather. That's 7% of our annual call volume in just a couple days, Martin said. But we were busy for the right reasons, people saying, we see power lines down, we're concerned about our neighbors. At least half the calls were electrical hazards like power lines and trees. If you see that, call us, she urged people within the district. We can't remove the lines, that's Xcel or Core, but we'll come check them out. Martin advised people to be cautious when using generators, particularly if they haven't used one before or if it hasn't been used in some time. Don't overload it, she said. Be extra cautious in this environment. We had a call this morning from somebody who plugged in their generator and it popped, sparked, and crackled. That made them nervous. It made us nervous, too, so we went and checked it out. Impact on businesses, seniors, Evergreen Chamber Director Nancy Judge said 98% of downtown Evergreen was without power during the windstorm. Just before the holidays is the busiest time for these businesses, she said. It's going to have a tremendous negative impact, a lot of hurt from this. In addition to lost sales, Judge noted that restaurants likely lost thousands of dollars worth of unconsumed food, much of which also can't currently be kept refrigerated. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. A home on Pleasant Park Drive was a complete loss in a December 17th fire started by a malfunctioning generator and then accelerated by the wind. And this is a picture of a home on fire. Bright orange. The whole photo is bright orange. And you can see just the shell of the side of a home. And there are three firefighters. One is holding a flashlight. It looks like, it doesn't look like anybody's actually shooting water at it, but I can't quite tell all of them what they're all doing. But it's bright red, orange. There's some trees. You can see a couple of hoses, three firefighters, and they have tanks on the back. They're in their full gear with helmets. And it's dark out at night, so it's the whole photo is glowing. New Year's Day Ice Fest Lake Plunge called off. Lack of ice, warm temps put kibosh on popular Evergreen holiday events by Jane Reuter. Two of the winter's most popular events are canceled due to insufficient ice on Evergreen Lake. The New Year's Ice Eve Ice Fest and New Year's Day Lake Plunge were called off. The Lake Plunge will be rescheduled in early 2026. We don't have an exact date yet, but probably the end of February, early March, said John DeRussel, president of Active for All. We've still got to raise money for Marin's kids. Marin Schreiber is a special operations coordinator for the Evergreen Park and Recreation District and runs programs for people with disabilities, better known as Inspire. The Lake Plunge is a major fundraiser for Inspire. Ice Fest is a popular family-friendly way to end the year that includes hockey, broomball, games, fire pits, marshmallow roasts, and live music. We had to make that call this morning, said Lake House manager Krista Emmerich. It's 70. It's just too warm. Once we get a solid foundation, we can get the park guys out there to water, which expedites the ice. But I can't get them out there yet. It's just not getting cold enough at night. Emmerich is disappointed for the students who usually attend the event. Kids are out of school and they all come out with their friends, she said, but it's just not happening. I think we'll get there, the lake freezing. It's just going to take a little bit longer. Emmerich said she and her staff have been brainstorming other ideas for winter fun that don't involve a frozen lake. Hank Alderfer's Celebration of Life set for January 3rd. Evergreen Lake House to host Community Memorial by Jane Reuter. A celebration of life for Hank Alderfer is planned from 2 to 6 p.m. January 3rd at Evergreen Lake House. Community members are encouraged not only to attend, but share their memories of Alderfer, his wife, Barbie said. The gathering will be catered by Lakewood's Hippie Chicks Catering. Alderfer died peacefully at home on December 19th after a 23-year battle with Parkinson's disease. Alderfer is survived by his wife, Barbie, and his sons, Nathan and Eric. Because of all the work he did, the lives he touched, and the lasting changes he left in Evergreen during his 78 years, a large crowd is expected. Alderfer's civic work has given the area some of its most treasured trails, vistas, and community facilities. His loss is deeply felt in Evergreen, as community members have already shared multiple comments, sorrow, and their respects on social media. Peter Eggers and Hank were friends for 54 years. Eggers said Hank took him under his wing when Eggers moved to Evergreen in 1971. He really served as a mentor, not only for how to live here in Evergreen, but how to be a citizen of Evergreen, Eggers said. He helped me building my house in 1998 and 89. We bonded over that too, and it was he who invited me to the board of the park and rec in 1992. Eggers is now serving his fifth term on the Evergreen Park and Recreation District Board. Hank was so multi-talented, involved in so many organizations. Eggers said he is hard to encapsulate. He was a leader, a rancher, a builder, a sawyer, and just a great friend. He was so many different things to so many different people. He was just iconic Evergreen. Eggers' wife, Peggy, saw those same qualities. The man had the kindest heart, she said, and boy, did he have a vision of what was important to preserve. Through relationships, just becoming friends with people, he made so much happen. A lot of the things we all love about Evergreen had his fingerprint on them. Open Space and Land Trusts, Hank was a founding member of the Mountain Area Land Trust and helped form the Evergreen Recreation Association, a precursor to today's Evergreen Park and Recreation District. He served on the Bear Creek Cemetery Board for more than 40 years, and he also helped build the Evergreen Lake House and Buchanan Recreation Center. In the mid-80s, Hank arranged the sale of his family's property, now part of the larger Alderfer Three Sisters Park, to Jefferson County Open Space, ensuring it would remain undeveloped and open for public access. He also played a vital role in preserving many other Evergreen area tracts of land. Those include Blair Ranch, which adjoined the Alderfer Homestead and is now part of Alderfer Three Sisters, Elk Meadows, Hiwan Heritage Park, and Conifer's Meyer Ranch. In 2007, he was inducted to the Jefferson County Hall of Fame. In 2016, Hank and Barbie published a series of local history columns, which once ran in the Canyon Courier as a book called Yesteryear. Just weeks ago, on November 9th, more than 100 people gathered at the Evergreen Fire Administration Building for a Thank Hank Day, designed not only to show their appreciation for his work, but inspire others to follow his example. Days after the event, Barbie Alderfer said Hank was still energized by the assembly. Hank built bridges between different people by finding common interests, she said. When we create things with our different talents, something really good happens. It spins off love. And this article is included with a photo with the following caption. Hank Alderfer greets My Mountain Town owner Sharon Trilk, before the November 9th tribute to his contributions began. And this is a photo of the man, Hank. He's kind of leaning over on a desk or on a table, talking to this woman, Sharon Trilk. He has on a black vest with a yellow and orange and green corsage. He has a white dress shirt on, and it looks like he has on jeans as well. Yes, he is a white man. He looks like he's in his 70s, maybe 80s, and mostly balding, white hair, dark eyes, and he's kind of smiling at her. It looks like she's talking. She has on a green and purple tie-dyed, it looks like a poncho almost, and she is blonde. She's white, she's blonde. She has some sunglasses on the top of her head. In the background, there is another woman also leaning over, and she has whitish, grayish hair. She has on a black or very dark colored long sleeve shirt. Looks like a green necklace. She's smiling, talking. She has glasses. She's also white. There is a, this is in a large, like a cinder block building, and there's a part of the wall that is reddish, and there are a couple of lights on it. And then there's also one other person in the background behind Hank, and it's a man with long hair, and it's white, and he also has on a long sleeve, purple-ish colored shirt and jeans and tennis shoes. Sheriff and Georgetown reach deal for law enforcement. The agreement provides full-time deputies to the town for patrol and control. This is an article by Christopher Coberill. The Clear Creek Sheriff's Department reached a deal with the Georgetown Board of Selectmen to provide long-term law enforcement to the town that has been without any kind of police force for more than a year. According to the Sheriff's Department, the intergovernmental agreement will provide a phased-in patrol presence of up to 3 deputies for a combined 120 hours a week and a patrol supervisor to serve as the point of contact for town of Georgetown. The department will also provide criminal investigations and evidence services, public records services, and code enforcement services. The Clear Creek County Board approved a 5-year deal of commissioners on December 9th. The price tag, however, it comes with a cost to the town, according to the CCSO Public Information Officer Jennifer Fulton. Annual costs for law enforcement services will not exceed $633,000, with quarterly payments of $52,750 per assigned deputy. Until the first deputy is assigned, the CCSO will provide law enforcement services for the town at a rate of $12,500 per month, according to the IGA. This agreement really is a win for the town and for our office. The town, Georgetown, has a need for law enforcement services, and the sheriff's office has the experience and resources to fulfill that need, CCSO Patrol Captain Eric Rubin said. Together, we have come to an agreement that will serve the town well and ensure consistent law enforcement for many years to come. The CCSO has been providing limited law enforcement services since December 2024 through temporary intergovernmental agreements, according to Fulton. These short-term agreements allowed time for the town to determine whether to reinstate its police department or contract with the CCSO long-term, Fulton said in a statement. It has been a long road, and the Board of Selectmen are extremely satisfied with the end result, said Georgetown Police Judge Georgia Kofod. According to Kofod, a resident task force was appointed to evaluate 6 options for law enforcement services. Those residents met over 6 months to review information and gather public feedback through forums and an open house. The Board of Selectmen determined that accepting services from CCSO could be at a lower cost than establishing a new Georgetown Police Department. Georgetown has been without any police force of its own since Police Marshal Daniel Tretcher from Manhattan, Kansas, was hired by the Board of Selectmen in August of 24 and subsequently quit just weeks later, penning a scathing 1,000-word letter of resignation to town leaders. It is with an extremely heavy and tortured heart that I tender this letter of resignation as your chief of police effective immediately, reads the letter from Tretcher, dated October 12, 2024. I came into this position optimistic and wide-eyed with an open mind, heart, soul, and spirit. Unfortunately, over the last week, my dream come true became a nightmare. According to the statement, the CCSO is currently recruiting for the deputy positions that will be assigned to Georgetown. And this article is included with a photo with the following caption. Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department agrees to provide full-time law enforcement to Georgetown at a price December 6. And this is a photo. It's taken from almost the ground. And it's a photo in the snow of a sheriff's car, Clear Creek County. And above that is a helicopter just hovering over the car. And behind that is, it looks like a mountain with snow on it and trees, forest trees. And then there's also a cell tower in the background. And the sky is blue with some pinkish clouds, like maybe it's sunrise or sunset as the time of day. From the Jeffco transcript, Senator Winter determined at fault for fatal crash. Legislator was legally drunk, autopsy says, by Isabel Guzman. The traffic crash that killed Colorado Senator Faith Winter the day before Thanksgiving was determined to be her fault, according to the 18th Judicial District Attorney's Office. Two crashes occurred close together in time and proximity on northbound Interstate 25 by East Dry Creek Road the evening of November 26. According to a December 19th press release, the first crash occurred around 6:05 p.m. when a car traveling northbound on I-25 collided with two more vehicles. The accident was immediately followed by another, a Ford F-350 flatbed truck, stopped in the left lane, which did not have visible rear taillights at the time of the crash, but had been driving with caution, according to investigators. A Hyundai Ioniq 5 carrying Senator Winter and no other passengers then rear-ended the Ford F-350. Winter was pronounced deceased at the scene. The coroner's office said she died of multiple blunt force injuries from the crash and that the toxicology report indicated Winter's blood alcohol concentration was 0.185%, more than twice Colorado's legal limit of 0.08%. The attorney's office said no criminal charges will be filed in the crash. Winter had been open about her experience with alcoholism and health concerns. Last year, Winter began undergoing treatment for a substance abuse disorder after showing up to a community meeting in North Glen drunk. Shortly after, Westminster City Councilor Christine Ireland called to file an ethics complaint against Senator Winter. Winter served on the council for 7 years before becoming a representative and then a senator. She could have killed someone, Ireland said. The Westminster Council ultimately did not file a complaint and cited North Glen's complaint as sufficient. Winter, who leaves behind two children and her fiancé, served 4 years as a legislator in Colorado. As a representative, Winter passed a bill that provided transparency for employee personnel files and another that allowed regional transportation district buses to use shoulder lanes amid high traffic volumes. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Winter worked to provide financial assistance to small businesses. She also passed the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which allowed for more accommodations, such as more frequent breaks for pregnant women in the workplace. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. Senator Winter served on the Westminster City Council before moving to the Colorado State Legislature in 2015. Courtesy of Senator Faith Winter. And this is a picture of a woman. She looks like she's in her 40s. She has just below shoulder length dark hair. It's straight. She looks to be a white woman. She's smiling at the camera. She has a blue, it's either a top or a dress on. I can't tell because the picture is from about waist up. She has her hand, her left hand on her hip. It looks like she has a ring on her left ring finger. And she has on a necklace that looks like it's about three strands connected together. And in the background, it looks like she's outside, although it's blurry. And there's some sort of like an overhang. It's like orange and green. Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, January 3rd, 2026 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.